The Battle of New Orleans took place 199 years ago today, and it was the last major battle of the War of 1812. Andrew Jackson, then a general, led makeshift American forces to victory against a much stronger British army, at least on paper. Jackson's courage and cunning were key factors in the battle, and it all made him a national hero and boosted him into the presidency. Our guest now is Richard Barbateau. He's deputy director of the Department of Military History at the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College up in Fort Leavenworth. He'll be talking about the battle tonight at the Central Library downtown. And, Rich, so good to have you here. Welcome.
Steve, thank you so much. So thrilled to be here.
Well, the War of 1812 is one of those wars that people often forget about. People usually focus on the Revolutionary War. Tell us, Rich, about the War of 1812 and what that was all about.
Well, I think American history, most Americans think that the War of 1812 had three major events. Of course, the first was the burning of Washington. The second one was the Star-Spangled Banner, the national anthem at the defense of Baltimore. But the third event is the Battle of New Orleans, because that was such a stunning victory, a catastrophic defeat for the British. So I think most Americans walk away from history knowing about those three events. But the War of 1812, of course, was something much more. Britain and France were caught in a existential fight for their lives. Britain had been fighting France for 20 years. They fight economically because they can't come to grips either on the water or on the land. And so they're seizing American ships on the high seas. Over 1,000 vessels and cargoes are seized by either the French Navy or the Royal Navy, but mostly the Royal Navy. But what's even worse than that, British officers are stopping American ships. They're coming on board. They're lining up the crew. And they're talking to each one of these people. And if they speak in a English, Scottish, Irish, or Welsh accent, they're presumed to have been born in the United Kingdom. And if so, they cannot change their nationality to be Americans. They cannot become naturalized American citizens, regardless of what their papers say. And therefore, they owe military service to Britain. And therefore, they are marched across into the British ship. Every once in a while, one of them who might oppose that is hung from a yardarm as an example to everyone else.
Wow.
Over 15,000 sailors are taken off of American merchant vessels, and a handful are taken off of American war vessels.
And James Madison, the president, had enough of this, right?
More than enough. Thomas Jefferson attempted to use economic sanctions to get Britain to treat us like – come to the big boys' table, treat us like a sovereign nation. It failed. Madison, a protege of Jefferson, and Jefferson to realize the economic sanctions, the embargo did not work. Madison finally goes to Congress. He gives them, here's all the reasons of what Britain has been doing to us. What are we going to do about it? Congress thinks about it for a week or two and declares war. This is our first war declared under the Constitution. It is our first foreign war, and we are taking on the world's superpower. And we have not much.
For the second time, in a sense.
For the second time.
Yeah.
And we have virtually no Navy, a minuscule army, and we're taking on a great power.
So, Rich Barbateau, set up for us a little bit this final battle of this war, the Battle of New Orleans. What had preceded that? How did we wind up fighting in that part of the country against this superpower?
The first 2 years of the war were American attempts to take Canada. We can't defeat Great Britain on the high seas, but if we seize Canada, we can get Great Britain perhaps to trade Canada for these concessions, to leave our ships and our sailors alone. That's what President Madison is going for. We make multiple invasions of Canada. All of them are failures. The country's going bankrupt. The Royal Navy's sailing up and down the Chesapeake, burning our villages. And then Britain defeats Napoleon. They have a huge navy. They have a huge army. It's not doing anything. And now it is time to beat up on America. America had stabbed them in their back. In the British public opinion, they were fighting a dictator in Europe, and they were doing it for the good of the world. And now here comes America declaring war on them. So now it's payback time.
And what's at stake if America loses this thing, Rich?
Oh, good. At the negotiations in Ghent, Belgium, the British, what they want to do is any land that they have conquered, they want to keep it after the peace treaty. They've seized 100 miles of the coast of Maine.
My goodness.
And they plan on incorporating it back into Canada. They've seized the entire Michigan territory, and they held on to that for about a year before we pushed them out, and they were going to incorporate that into Canada. So what they want is territory. They want to remove the United States, all of its naval vessels, from the Great Lakes. They want to take back the Northwest Territories. This is Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan. They want to take that all back and give it to the Indians, so it's a buffer state between British North America and the United States. And if the United States can't go into that territory, then hopefully there'll be no friction with the Indians.
So there's a lot riding here.
There absolutely is.
So how does Andy Jackson wind up fighting the British, the superpower, down in New Orleans?
Right. Andrew Jackson, during the American Revolution, he's 13 years old. He's fighting with the militia. He's a courier. He's not a combatant. He's captured by the British. During his prison tour there, a British officer demands that Andy Jackson polish his boots. Jackson refuses. The officer pulls out his saber and starts thrashing Jackson, leaving Jackson with scars on his head and on his left hand and arm. That provokes a loathing in Andrew Jackson that he will never get over. He hates the British to his core. He moves out of North Carolina, settles around Gallatin near Nashville, Tennessee, starts a store, goes into business, gets a plantation. He's a self-made man. He was an orphan at the age of 14. He's a slave owner. He gets active in Tennessee politics. They send him to Congress in 1798, so he's been at the federal level. They make him the major general in charge of the Tennessee militia. So now, a few years later, he is brought into the U.S. Army as a regular army officer with the rank of major general, and the Creek War erupts in Alabama. Well, the regular army is fighting the Indians is fighting the British around Canada. Who's going to defend around Alabama? Jackson goes down with a large number of Tennessee militia. Now, Georgia and Mississippi are also throwing troops into it.
And some pirates come aboard, too, don't they?
Well, they will, but not at this stage.
Okay.
So Jackson is just – he's focused like a laser. He is relentless. He's going to run down the Creek Indians, the Red Sticks, who are in revolt. He's going to defeat them in a matter of months. And in doing so, he kind of comes to national attention for this. He's given command then of Military District Number 7, which goes from Tennessee all the way down to Louisiana and the Mississippi Territory. He's got two missions: put down any Indian uprisings and defend Mobile and New Orleans against the British. And they are heading across the ocean, and they are going to attack.
So he knows they're coming.
He absolutely does.
What does he think? Does he think he has a chance of defeating this super force based on the men he has at his disposal at that point?
Andy Jackson is determined. He's confident, possibly overconfident. He's absolutely a man of action. Not that he isn't smart. He's quite smart. He's quite clever as well. But he will take a rapid decision when he thinks he knows what the facts are. He is so determined to defend New Orleans that he accidentally slips up and says, "I will defend this city, but I will burn it to the ground before I will let the British take it." That scares a lot of people living in New Orleans.
I can imagine. Yeah. And how do they react to that?
Well, the legislature, a bunch of the legislators, I should say, get together while Jackson's out defending the city, and they are talking about a secret surrender to the British. They'll surrender to the British. They will bypass Jackson. With a promise from the British not to burn down the city. Now, the warehouses in New Orleans are stacked high with cotton, with whiskey, with salt, pork, with all sorts of good things that the British want. And they will be willing to trade these to the British if they will spare the city. Now, the British have already burned Washington. They've shown that they can do it. They've burned other cities around the Niagara frontier and on the Chesapeake Valley. They burned downtowns. And the folks in New Orleans understand that that could very well be their fate if they don't work something out. And they do not have faith in Jackson, that Jackson will be able to defend them.
Let's talk about that in just a second. Let me just remind our listeners who are listening to Up to Date, and Rich Barbuto will be speaking tonight about Andrew Jackson and the Battle of New Orleans at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. That's the Central Branch downtown, 14 West 10th Street. More information or to RSVP, just go to kclibrary.org. So how does Andy Jackson then begin to take on the British and actually defeat them, Rich?
Well, he shows up and he mobilizes the Louisiana militia. And the governor, Governor Claiborne, has a state legislature right there in New Orleans. And the governor is in charge of the militia until they're federalized. So he mobilizes them. There are a lot of volunteer units in New Orleans, the Santo Domingo Freemen of Color, who are refugees from the revolution in Santo Domingo. There's volunteer companies that, just like being soldiers, they buy their own uniforms and their own weapons. They are there. Jackson also knows that he can count on several thousand Tennessee volunteers. That's why we call Tennessee the volunteer state. The volunteers who will come down to New Orleans and fight for him. These are experienced riflemen. So we know he has a lot of troops coming in. He's got a company of Choctaw Indians that ally to him just for the pay. I think that's there's U.S. Marines. There are some regular soldiers there. It's really a diversified army. We like to say that half the soldiers in his command are Creoles. They speak French as their primary language.
Wow.
They can understand commands given in standard English after a fashion. The Tennessee troops show up there, too, and they've worked with Jackson before. These troops have not fought together. They've not trained together. And they're all together with different languages, different backgrounds, different levels of ability.
And here come the British.
And here come the British.
We have a question about different folks who comprised this army here. Let's go to Mike from Baldwin City. Mike, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually part Choctaw and Biloxi. And my people, and it was probably Oklahoma, six towns Choctaw, and Choctaw from the Bayou Lacombe area down there on the north side of Lake Pontchartrain that fought alongside Andrew Jackson when that battle was going down. And I remember going that area around Chalmette as a kid because my mom was born in Chalmette. But it's just something to hear all that, and I appreciate what you were saying earlier because a lot of people don't realize the Indian part of it because the Choctaw sided with the Americans and the Creeks went with the British. And I also know Muncies who were up in that Canadian theater at the Battle of Moraviantown, but I appreciate you talking about this.
Morning. Yeah, Mike, thank you. I appreciate that. And so, again, he has this army comprised of all kinds of different peoples. What's the magic formula he has for knocking off the British?
It's largely the force of his personality. He speaks his
mind.
It made
that much difference.
It makes that much difference. When I look at the other available military commanders in the South, I can think of no one that could have done what he did. He's to guard New Orleans. He has to guard many different avenues of approach into the city, some of them from the bayou, some of them straight up the Mississippi River. He does not know where the British are coming, and he loses track of that. And when the British are finally discovered, they're only 8 miles away from the city, and he has no defenses between them and the city. So what he does first off, when he gets the word in the middle of the afternoon that the British are 8 miles away, he gathers all the troops he has in the city, and at that time it was about 2,100. And he sets them marching down the river road to confront the British at night. At 7:30 in the evening, out of nowhere.
It's Christmas time, too.
Yes, it is, 23rd mm-hmm. of December. Out of nowhere, they come stomping towards the British camp. And the British are certainly not expecting this. There's a schooner, the Louisiana, that's out in the river, and it slowly drifted down the river. It drops its anchor. It's very close to shore. It sees the campfires of the British. It opens fire on the British, takes them completely by surprise, and that's the signal for the night attack to begin. So there's 2,100 Americans speaking different languages and whatnot, and a unified British force of about 1,600 regulars who have defeated the best armies that Napoleon has sent against them. It's a nighttime battle. It lasts hours. The troops are intermingled completely. The field is covered by gun smoke. The fighting is hand to hand. It's cutlass and sword and bayonet and tomahawk and pistol and rifle.
Wow.
This goes on for hours. And finally, the British send more reinforcements in. Jackson realizes he's accomplished everything he wants to accomplish, and he withdraws about 4 o'clock in the morning back to New Orleans. You know, in boxing, they tell you the first thing you do in boxing with an opponent is hit him square on the nose, and that'll cause him to be a little more cautious.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what Jackson has done. He's hit the British on the nose. They're knocked back on their heels. They have great respect for the American army. Now they're going to take their time to prepare a deliberate attack on New Orleans. And that's what Jackson needed. He needed to buy time to build his defensive lines, which did not exist before the 23rd of December.
And this big battle, was this the one that occurred 199 years ago today?
No, that happens 2 weeks later.
Two weeks later.
This battle takes 2 weeks. Once the British and the Americans face one another about 3 miles apart, Jackson takes the Rodriguez Canal. It's a dry canal, but it goes from a cypress swamp about 2 miles into the Mississippi River. He builds a wall of dirt, and he's using slave labor as well as the troops, and they're putting up an earthen rampart along the backside of this this big ditch. The British see this, so they've got to get across a big ditch. They bring in their artillery. Now, their artillery comes from 60 miles away. It's thrown into small boats. It's rowed across Lake Bourne, enters a bayou, goes through a cypress swamp, comes out the other side. So the British sailors are just shuttling back and forth, wow, bringing artillery and ammunition forward. On the 1st of January, the British commander decides to try his artillery out, and he has his troops waiting, and he hopes to knock out the American artillery and maybe cause a breach in the wall. They fire for hours on hours. They run through all their ammunition, and when it's all over, the American artillery has survived. They've lost a couple artillery pieces in the exchange of fire. There's no hole in the wall. The British commander says, okay, I've got to try this a different way. This is not working.
What a great story. Again, Rich Barbuto will be speaking tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Branch. More information or to RSVP, go to kclibrary.org. You told that story very well.
Thanks,
I really
Steve.
Appreciate that, Rich.